नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स बुद्धं धम्मं संघं नमस्सामि। Friends, today we're going to do a day long, and the theme of the day, which I'll set out, we'll reflect on today, is becoming and the middle way. And this is, as this tends to work out, the morning session we'll look at the problem, and in the afternoon we tend to look more at the solution. Yeah, but we've covered bhava, or becoming, bhava, for several times already. I think several day longs or Upasita talks or such. And it's because it's a very important, and it shows up throughout the Buddha's discourses. And he says, back in his day, he said, "Oh, this generation is obsessed with becoming. Generation is obsessed with, continued existence." And that continues to hold right through to this day. There are some things that just don't change. Bhava is the definition of the problem, but it's still, well, it clicks with a lot of people very quickly. Oh yeah, okay, yeah, I see when I do that. In a lot of ways, our conception of becoming, it has to be simple because it's a very complex thing that we do with the mind. And so we tend to simplify it in our mind so that we can discover any trace of the times when we do it, right? But it seems intuitive. Yeah, obviously, when I'm really stuck on something and I think I'm involved with it, then I exist. Yeah. And that is becoming. Becoming and existence are the same thing. And while intellectually it sounds weird to say that, well, if you didn't exist, there wouldn't be a problem. That is exactly what we're saying in Buddhism. And a lot of learning about becoming is learning to understand that the way that most of the world sees reality is flipped on its head. We are taught from, as soon as we're a little kid until we grow up, that what happens in the world is real, and what happens in our mind is an illusion. Yeah. And this is just drilled into us. Like, pay attention to what you can see and hear and taste and feel and touch and hear and all of this. This is the world. And all of this is make-believe, right? Don't let it lead you down the wrong path. But in when we start to investigate the mind and we start to meditate, we realize that everything that's happening out here is ephemeral and kind of fades into the background once we realize that what's really driving our experience is what's going on in the mind, and that it is more subtle, it is more profound, and it is the basis of all of our suffering. We have to become in the mind before we can ever become in physical reality. But once we understand that, we see that that's the very nature of the problem. Because we try to exist mentally, what comes out into our physical world when we're acting, when we're speaking and doing things, is fraught with ego, is fraught with clinging, is fraught with identification. And because of that, we suffer. Because our mental reality that I exist doesn't match our physical reality. Yeah, the body continues to exist no matter what we're doing mentally. But that's just an illusion. The body is just being a body. It is not who we are. It is not what we are. It seems to us that, this is what it's all about. But in the mental sphere, and as the Buddha shows us, what we should really be paying attention to if we want to get past suffering is how do we keep that tendency towards thinking that we exist from happening, and just looking at reality as reality, rather than saying, this is me doing, This is me owning. This is me, suffering. We step back and we say, well, if I don't make a me in this scenario, stuff still happens. The becoming, the existence, from the mental standpoint, is completely optional. And it causes all sorts of problems. It causes all sorts of misperceptions. So we really do step back and say that I don't need to exist. I don't need to make myself exist, and everything still works. But this is a lifelong process, yeah, to kind of figure out how all of this works. And when we go to the suttas, often what we find is the Buddha's talking about it in a slightly different way, because if we look in the Pali Canon, our references, deal with a culture that was very comfortable with the idea of rebirth. Yeah, and rebirth was the essence of the problem. If all of your suffering was contained within this one life, then there is no problem. At the time that you die, your suffering stops. No problem. You just be as crazy as you want to be, and then that's it. But as the Buddha points out, take the perspective that maybe the mind, because the mind is not the body, maybe that continues. As we can see in our daily life, the mind continues from one moment to the next. It recreates itself constantly. Well, imagine if at the time of death, the mind keeps doing that, and then you have another life. Well, that life will be dictated by this very process of becoming. As it will have been so used to existing that we will insist we continue existing, and that will be the driving force for the next rebirth. So this is the cosmology, the essence of the problem in the bigger scope of the Buddhist teaching. And this is what we'll see in the Pali Canon. And Buddhist, he frames things in terms of this understanding of rebirth. In the modern day, what we tend to do is relate to becoming more as a substitute for the word, for the id, yeah, for the ego. Whenever my ego is showing up, I'm becoming, I'm being, I'm selfing, as the modern meditation teachers will create all sorts of verbs to describe what they're doing. And we all go, yeah, that's what I'm doing, and that's a problem. So in order to really study this, I'm going to shift us over to the Buddhist paradigm, but then we're going to try to bring this into the modern day, bring this as a way that makes sense of the way that we tend to look at this in terms of, well, I don't know anything about rebirth. I don't know anything about what's going to come after. So how does this teaching of becoming actually apply in my life, in this existence, where I am suffering, where I'm having a problem, and where I have, the ability to do something about it? Start off with just an example of one such sutta where the Buddha kind of lays out becoming and how it breaks down. This may be, you've heard of becoming, you've heard of bhava, you've heard of existence, but you know that the Buddha, he tended to break it down into three different parts. Because if you look at it in terms of continued existence, in terms of renewed existence, or in terms of rebirth, then where you end up existing is dictated by what kind of becoming, what kind of selfing that you are actually doing. And so this is in the Anguttara Nikaya, Book of the Threes, number 76. The Venerable Ananda went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side, and said to him, "Venerable sir, they speak of this thing called bhava, of continued existence. How is continued existence defined?" And the Buddha says, "If, Ananda, there were no deeds to result in the sensual realm, would continued existence in the sensual realm still come about?" He's saying, if there's no kamma that results in a sensual realm rebirth, that's us, then would we be reborn in the sensual realm? And Ananda says, no, basically, as he understands it, karma is what generates rebirth. And so the Buddha says, so, Ananda, karma is the field, consciousness is the seed, craving is the moisture. The consciousness of sentient beings who are shrouded by ignorance and fettered by craving becomes established in this lower realm. That's how there is rebirth into a new state of existence in the future. This is the simple framework. Then the Buddha goes on, if there were no deeds to result in the realm of luminous form, subtle form, would continued existence in the realm of subtle form come about? And Ananda says, no. And then the Buddha says, if there are no deeds to result in the formless realm, would continued existence in the formless realm still come about? And Ananda says, no. And so the Buddha says, the consciousness of sentient beings, shrouded by ignorance and fettered by craving, thus becomes established in a higher realm. And that is how there is rebirth into a new state of existence in the future. And that is how I define bhava, continued existence. So these are the three ways that it breaks down. We have the kind of becoming that results and deals with this sensual world. And five senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the skin, the tactile sensation, these dictate our experience. They are giving us data about what's going on in the world. And how we relate to that is a whole part of the becoming process. And now, with Laura's help, I'm going to try to break these three kinds of becoming down so that we can take this into our meditation. We can start looking at it. We can get up. We can do some walking meditation. We can make ourselves lunch, and we can be looking for this. We can be looking for this from the Buddha's perspective. Yeah. Imagining that we dissolve that boundary where we say, well, I just want to look at this one life and just let that drop and say, imagining that what I'm going to become tomorrow is dictated by the mental states that I'm developing now, yeah, then what kind of existence would I find myself in tomorrow? What kinds of mental states, what kinds of becoming is arising? Because if no becoming is happening, then we don't have to worry about the problem. Whatever tomorrow brings will be fine. We won't suffer over it. But if we find ourselves developing one of these kinds of identification, one of these kinds of existence, then that's probably going to carry over into tomorrow. And if we look back at our life, yeah, we tend to fall into ruts, yeah? We tend to be patterns. You know, if we were a gym yesterday, we tend to be a gym today, right? I'm not saying anything terribly weird. We're kind of reborn every day that goes by. And so why not take a look at this? And Laura has helped create some little slides for us, drawn some illustrations. Okay, so the first one we have is Kama Bhava, and this is sense sphere becoming. Yeah. This is what we're probably most familiar with. Whenever our sense of existing is rooted in sense data, is rooted in our physical body and our physical world. And again, all of the things that we describe are not, it's not just us. As we found, as our practice develops, we realize that as much as we do these things to ourselves, we believe that we exist, that it's the same exact process and problem when we do it to others. Yeah, so we can use these interchangeably. What we do to others to assume that they exist and plug them into an identity is the same process for how we do that to ourselves. Yeah. So when we take in data through the senses and we use that to kind of figure out where we are, we're doing something very understandable, yeah? Where it's like we're you know, peering through binoculars and trying to figure out what's out there, or listening to headphones and trying to put ourselves mentally into the world that we hear. Yeah. The essence of this kind of becoming is it's we can see it. we can point to the thing that we are becoming. The example here is that Bob is a builder, and this kind of becoming is where the physical stuff in the reality that we see and hear and touch is dictating what we think the identity is. Yeah. And if you see Bob here and you see how he's dressed, then it probably makes sense. Of course, he looks, I guess he was, this is an actual guy, by the way. I don't know that his name is Bob, but he was coming to work on Laura's house the other day. And you just look at him and he has a hard hat, he has, a reflective vest, he's got a tool belt, he's got a tool bag, he's carrying all sorts of building materials. And when we look out in the world and we see somebody with a hard hat and with a reflective vest and carrying around tools, we say, oh, that person's a builder, that person's a plumber, that person's an electrician. What we see dictates the identity that we assign to that person. And we might not realize how comprehensive this packet of existence is. Yeah. When based on one little thing that we see, we're assuming a lot. And this guy has technical skills and he's doing a job and he's going to keep things running and he's going to ask for money at the end. And that's what a builder is. Yeah. And this happens very quickly. Yeah. It happens so quickly that if we slow down our minds with, by doing like a day-long meditation retreat, we start to see we do this in so many different ways. Yeah. It's you see a man or a woman, and you see the okay, that's a man. He's going to behave in a particular way. You see a woman, that's a woman. She's going to behave in a particular way. You see a dog. Oh, that's a dog. It's going to behave in a particular way. You're out moving about, and you see somebody has a particular ethnicity, and as soon as you peg it, you're like, oh, they're from that country. Indians are going to act like this, and they're going to act like this, and they're going to talk slightly like this, and maybe they eat this kind of food, and maybe they come from this kind of family, and we do it very, very quickly, yeah, because our sense data is being taken in, and we're using it to form assumptions about the world around us. And in a lot of ways, this is not a problem in and of itself. This idea of processing what we see and hear and smell and taste and touch, it works for us. Yeah. If Bob here didn't show up at Laura's house dressed as he did, she might think that he was a robber. Yeah, this is a guy is just showing up, and suddenly he's unwiring things on the outside of the house. That would be you would call the cops. Yeah, even more so if he's wearing like black clothing and you can only see his eyes and he's like sneaking through the bushes. Then he's the robber identity, and you're definitely going to call the cops. Yeah, but because he's dressed like this, your immediate assumption is, oh, okay, I know what he's doing. I know who he is. I know his function. I can predict his comma, his actions, based on what I see of this is the most basic entry-level form of becoming, though. And hopefully, as we start to meditate and we start to examine the Buddhist teachings and we start to learn and we start to calm down, we take precepts and we begin to cultivate the Eightfold Path, what we will find is this kind of becoming erodes very quickly because we're told again and again, I am not the body. Yeah. I am not the feelings that I have in relation to this. To practice renunciation and maybe don't fixate on, food and clothing and jewelry and television and all these things. It's like, yeah, find the calm space on the other side of those and realize that it's calm. And then we start to like, well, maybe I don't need to engage so much with the central world to find happiness. And if we try, probably what we find is, oh yeah, happiness and the central world are two totally independent things. Yeah. I can be happy with the central world, but the central world is not necessarily going to make me happy, even if I get exactly what I thought I wanted. And sometimes that a teacher would say is that that's the biggest disaster of all is to get exactly what you wanted. Because as a monk, I find that when I get something I didn't expect, it is incredibly way better than I can imagine, because apparently my imagination is fairly, bland and boring. And what actually is offered to me just seems so much better. Oh, I didn't know I needed that, but the fact that it fulfills a need is just perfect. And so this kind of becoming where we think we are the body, we think we are our clothing, we think we are our occupation, and we think that other people are the same, we should stop doing it. Because it isn't necessary. If I were to ask the question, like, well, but what does a Buddhist look like? You'd sort of realize immediately you don't know. And it's just that simple. It's because if you've ever been to a temple somewhere, you probably saw a mix of people. They came from different, they had different levels of income. They came from different countries. They spoke different languages. They had different hairstyles, different clothing. They preferred different kinds of food, and they were all just mixed together by their common devotion to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. Just drawn in by that, and so you can't really say what the becoming of a Buddhist is. And lo and behold, the Buddha is saying, "Well, don't do it." And so there are lots of various forms that get repeated through Buddhist culture, but the Buddha never said, like, this is, hey, this is the only one, this is the one you should be. He's not holding up a particular model of a human being and saying, this is what you should aspire to. What we should aspire to is the Eightfold Path. And when we cultivate that, actually, all of the identification and all of the trying to fit into a particular container in the central world starts to fall away. So you'll be able to look at this and say, well, what is the bhava of a mother? What is the bhava of a pet owner? What is the bhava of a man, of a woman, of a neighbor? What is the bhava of a daughter checking on their parents? What is the bhava? And see where they come up today, and then just see, do you need them? Do you need them to understand the person and the situation? Or can you just kind of set that aside? There's a transition point now to the second kind of bhava. So say that, interesting. So say that you have Bob. Is one day he's working on a job site, and a monk comes by with an alms bowl and goes up to the house that he's working on, and the person comes out and they put a bit of food in the bowl, and the monk walks off. And Bob thinks to himself, like, here I am working 8 hours a day in order to just to go home and to go to the store and buy food and put it in a refrigerator, and the monk just came to the door and people put their leftovers in his bowl, and all he had to do was walk up, and he didn't have to work 8 hours to get that food in his bowl. And so Bob starts to think, maybe I should be a monk. That would be a good idea. Yeah, why don't I do that? So, long story short, Bob goes off. He finds a monastery. He takes the three refuges. He shaves his head. He's put in the kitchen for a while, and he's a sort of temple attendant for a while, and eventually he gets into Buddhist monk robes, and he's given the name Tan Karoto, which is a bit of a Pali joke for those who are studying Pali. And now we get into the second kind of becoming, which is one that extends past what we see in the physical reality. Yeah, we have what's called Rupa Bhava. Now, Rupa means form, it means matter, it means an object. Yeah, that is a Rupa. Now, most of the time when we talk about rupa, it's in terms of the five aggregates, right? And this to us is rupa. This is our form. And when we use it in the five aggregates, rupa does mean it is dealing with matter, with mass, with objects. In this context, though, it's dealing specifically with mentally generated objects. This is where I said the world has things kind of backwards, that it kind of turns things upside down, and that it assumes that what we see with our senses is what's real. But this kind of becoming, and the on to the next one, is it shows us that because becoming happens in the mind first, that our mental pictures and our mental ideas and our concepts are much more powerful, than what we see in the world. So this kind of becoming deals with it's sporadic because it isn't rooted in a physical thing that kind of stays put and is continuous. We can jump in and out of this kind of becoming based on our ideas and based on our intentions and based on our desires. Right? But you can know this kind of becoming is happening by the kind of the content. There is a continuity to it. So in this instance, even though Bob became Tan Karoto and moved into the monastery, every time there was a building project in the monastery, the abbot of the monastery would kind of call Karoto over and he'd say, "Oh, Karoto, we're thinking of putting up this stupa. Do you think you can help oversee? We get volunteers who'll come in, and sometimes they know what they're doing, sometimes they don't. And if nobody has like the big picture, sometimes this stupa leans a bit. And it'd be great if we could build it right the first time." And Tan Karoto is a monk. In his physical form, this is what he is. But in his mind, he builds. He's been doing it all his life. He's like, "Oh, yeah. And I'll get the blueprints and I'll see how it is. And I'll tell you do this, you do that, you do this." And then when somebody's pouring the concrete wrong, he's like, whoa, that's not how you do it. Stop. Let me show you how to do it." Because he knows, yeah? So we know this is not based on his sense data. His sense data says that he is a monk. And we know what the bhava of a monk is, right? It's somebody who walks around. It is quiet and polite and receives just what it's given and does a lot of meditation. Our concept of what the monk bhava is probably doesn't include that there's somebody who's out on the work project telling people what to do. And yet, even somebody in that form could jump in and out of this idea, this existence of the builder. And we do this too. And we might see this. Maybe, our concept of a mother is somebody very nurturing and they have a young child and they're kind of nurturing them or they're cooking a meal for them and looking after them. But everybody knows that children grow up. But does the concept of being a mother persist? And of course it does. And even as there are no outward signs of being a mother, maybe in the mind of the mother, they are still the mother. And they still have all of these qualities and aspects of being a mother. But maybe as the child grows up and goes off to college, that stops coming out in the same way. It's based on a mental object, it's based on a mental concept. But when it comes out, it totally comes out. So the child calls from wherever they are, and suddenly they go into mother mode. And like, "You're not getting enough to eat, and look at you, you're wasting away." And so what about grandchildren? Are you dating anyone? And all of these like mother qualities and this mother existence comes into being. It wasn't there a second ago. It got triggered. But this is the power of this kind of becoming. So when we do our meditation today, what'll happen is as we start to calm ourselves and we start to follow the breath or do a mantra, we'll notice that the sense world the volume starts getting turned down. All of the things that we used to engage with and say that, okay, I am a body. I am a body in space. I got to feed myself. I have to go to the bathroom. We stop thinking about that. Because it is not applicable to our mental experience. And what the mental experience that we start to have is dictated by the images and the voices and the memories and the feelings, the sensations, in our mental world. So the Buddha talks about this in terms of rebirth into other realms. He is pointing out that if every moment we don't come into being, like, what do I see? What do I hear? If we're not obsessed with the sensual world and assuming that it needs to tell us what's going on, if it has gone quiet, then what'll happen is the mind discovers what's going on. The mind has is able to create what is going on. Yeah. And if we identify, if we associate, if we exist based on what is happening in our mental sphere, then at the time of death, this is one possible way of taking rebirth. And there are all these various realms where beings are in existences generated by their concepts. Yeah. And these concepts are not as stable, not as solid as our physical bodies are in the sensual world, because this is the mind doing mental stuff. If we read this in the commentaries, we'd probably get the impression that this is something that only happens for people who have the jhanas, only happens for people who have very high levels of meditative attainment. And that's kind of the perspective that is being presented, yeah, by the commentaries. It's like, well, first, totally get rid of your sensual realm becoming. And then you can start to work on this, because until you can slow the mind down and actually see your mental images, actually hear your mental voice, actually know what idea you're attending to at any given moment, and get it to kind of not stay still, but at least stop moving around so quickly. Until you can do that, you can't really attend to all of your ideas. But I think that's really oversimplified. It doesn't take long, as we're sitting there and we're quieting our mind, for the sense world to kind of go quiet, and we start to see all of the things that we're still trying to be, all of the things that we're still trying to do. Yeah, we have a memory of a particular conversation, and all of a sudden we're back in that argument. And we're not there physically, but we jump into it mentally, and we create a whole existence and a standpoint and an opinion and a stake in the mental argument based on an idea. So this is a whole way of existing in relationship to our subtle forms, our mental forms. Yeah. Which, again, if we actually do get to a place in our meditation where we can perceive them, we'll realize they're much more beautiful, they're much more powerful, they're much more impactful, than what we get from our senses. And as soon as we get to that stage, we start to realize, like, I'd much rather figure this out. This is way more compelling, the stuff that's going on in my mind. And that's part of why samadhi is a kind of it's ehipassika. It drives you along, yeah, because this is more important in a way. But we have to get to it, yeah. And once we get to it, we start to realize, okay, the sense stuff, that's trivial. This is leading to a whole different kind of existence and is much more foundational to why I suffer. So let's put a stop to that. Everybody still awake? Is this clicking at all? Just make some, do some general. Okay, I see. These heads are not totally up and down. They're a little left and right. But this is what it is when we study the canon. Yeah, we go to the canon and ask it for an answer, and it says, "Well, hey, look, becoming is not. It's not just a simple thing. If it was just a simple thing, everybody would figure it out." This is a multifaceted thing, and it's a powerful thing that leads into all forms of existence here in samsara. Samsara being the continued wheel of rebirth that we find ourselves in. And the Buddha wants us to look at it from this perspective because it gives us a sense of motivation, of urgency, yeah? And it lets us drop our guard so that we can kind of imagine, like, this is what happens when we go to sleep, yeah. When we go to sleep, we're not taking in sense data, where our mind is generating whole worlds and putting us in there. And it doesn't take us long to kind of figure out where we are in the dream and start to have emotions, start to have reactions, start to run around and get chased by monsters and all of these things based on what we've been cultivating in our waking life.
Yeah.
It's just a reflection of the kind of becoming that we find ourselves falling into. Now, the final becoming, and I need to find someone so that I can see it too. Final kind of becoming is formless becoming. And if again, if you this is arupa or becoming without subtle form. And if you were to again look in the commentaries, you would get the perspective that only the most powerful meditators have any relationship to this kind of becoming. But that would be useless to us, right? Because we want to know how to use this. We want to know how to apply the Dhamma in our daily lives. And this kind of becoming doesn't only exist in meditation. It's coming out through our kamma, through our actions, through our activity in the world. That's why we get into this, is why we suffer. Okay? So looking at formless becoming is all kinds of becoming that are not dictated by objects. So it's not our mind sets a scene and we jump into that scene in a particular role, but rather it deals with the very essential concepts or archetypes that are the building blocks of our mind itself. And this kind of becoming is it can be acted out. Like we can jump into this role. And we don't necessarily need to be in a particular form to do it, or we can look out in the world and see that this is happening, and identify it. Oh, that's this kind of becoming. And by identifying it, we can develop all sorts of associations and feelings and habits towards it. So to say we take the very idea of building, we might not think much about it. It's kind of obvious what a builder is. Yeah, we're kind of obvious what it is to build. But imagine that you're able to take your mind out of your body and you're able to float around the world. And you don't have to be in a body to do this. You don't have to have eyes. You don't have to have ears. You just perceive everything that's going on. As you would float through the world, you would see this aspect of building, of being a builder, just showing up in all sorts of different places. And you would start to realize as you survey the world with your you pervade it with your mind that, wow, this is happening a lot. And it's happening in so many different ways because it's not limited either by a particular physical form or even by a particular set of objects or circumstances. It is dictated specifically by knowledge, by kamma. An idea arises, and that idea is the kernel which leads to various kind of forms being brought together, various kind of bodies being manipulated in the sense world to go and do something. We have the idea of building, and that idea comes out as such, like when we're a child, we're given a bunch of blocks, and we start to stack them on each other. We kind of already got this sense of like putting things together, of building something, of creating something. And as soon as we have the ability to act on it, we do. This kind of becoming of existence is like, no. And if somebody were to come along and we're building a little stack of something, and they were to come along and they were just to kind of sweep it over and just knock it over, we would probably get upset. And this is the clue to us that this kind of becoming is not without suffering. It seems like it's very, very high and mighty, and maybe it's beyond the scope of all of our mortal concerns, but just knock over a kid's tower of blocks, they're probably going to feel something. You're probably going to hear about it. Because it doesn't feel good when we have this idea of an existence in play, in action. And something happens to take that away from us. Even though a child can do it, or a teenager can do it, or an old man can do it, that it can be done in the Western Hemisphere and the Eastern Hemisphere, the Northern Hemisphere, the Southern Hemisphere. It can be done 2,000 years ago, and it can be done in the modern day. And it'll probably still be, happening 2,000 years in the future. Even though all of these things are the case, we know it when it happens. And this is this kind of becoming. So again, we're having to see this is just to look into the world and realize there are these existences, these subtle, formless existences that just seem to come out of nowhere. Yeah. When somebody is becomes the leader of a group, right? We can't even really easily define what that is. And yet the moment somebody becomes a leader, that all of these different patterns start to play out. Yeah. And they're not anybody can be a leader if they do the appropriate comma that kind of triggers this identification in people. And in a lot of ways, this is helpful to us. So we kind of reify it. We agree with it. Yeah. We say, okay, that guy seems to be taking charge. Why don't I just follow him? It works for us in a wide variety of circumstances. But then what we do when we try to deconstruct these is see the cases where it doesn't work, see the cases where it comes back to bite us. And so somebody is the leader, but then they quit. What happens then? We've suddenly been deprived of what we thought was a particular existence. So that this person was taking that role, and suddenly the group doesn't have a leader. Well, it didn't have a leader per se. It had somebody who was acting out that. And if we start to see that, then we realize, oh, anybody can take that, but then again, it's not that you have to be the leader. You don't have to wear the badge or have the rank. It was more based on the particular comma, and that comma is not limited. Yeah. The thing that one leader does is not the same thing that another leader does, right? You can have different kinds of leaders. So even the comma that we think that it takes to be a leader or a builder or a father or any of these is not as limited as our mind wants it to be. And that's the drawback of these identities, these existences. Yeah. They limit us, they handicap us, and they confuse us. This is when we see that they're not necessary. Yeah. We can kind of set them aside. And lo and behold, the world keeps turning. Yeah. Everything keeps happening. And so now we can shift to the meditation portion of the program. Yeah. And it's usually say maybe time, if you'd like, you come and go on the half hour. If you're sitting in front of the computer and you leave your video on, it'd be nice for people to see that others are meditating. But also, if you have to do something, just turn the video off. You do sitting meditation, do walking meditation. And this is the essence of the morning. Yeah, looking at the problem. And the problem is existences. And as with many problems, sometimes the biggest step is identifying and naming the problem. Yeah. I am in this particular scenario where I am suffering. Why am I suffering? It's because I'm trying to be the blank, or I think I'm the blank. And that maybe that person doesn't agree with me, or maybe it's not the best position to be in, and maybe it's not what I would choose. And I'm like, well, do I have a choice? Does it have to be that way? Is it as limited as my mind is telling me it is? Or maybe it's not limited at all. We break down our basic sense sphere becomings and what is underneath that. Yeah. If tomorrow we woke up in a different body, what are the things that we would do? Yeah. Now, some of that would be pretty basic. We'd go out and we'd try to find something to eat and we'd try to get a roof over our head. But what are the things that are not basic? What are the things that where if we woke up in a different body, we would still try to sign into our Facebook account? Yeah. And it's like, well, if we were in a different body, shouldn't we have a different Facebook account? Well, how many kinds of becoming are like self-limiting and don't actually reference what body we're in, but we would still do that? And then we start to understand how we are what we are, even though, technically we, by genetics, we should have been able to be anything. Yeah. And yet we didn't grow up as a kind of carbon copy of our parents. We grew up in this totally different individual because we had these ideas and inclinations and desires kind of all primed and ready to go. And what were they? What patterns have we been led into in our life by our desires and inclinations to be in a particular existence? To be a particular thing. And so that's the seed for the meditation, yeah. And see what we come up with, and we can kind of check notes. And before we start the afternoon session, we'll double check and see if this is not too esoteric. But if it seems like a bit too much information, then just meditate, yeah. Just get some peace this morning, and we'll look at the solution, the Eightfold Path, in the afternoon.